All right, I'll call him up quick. He was at dinner, so I'm pretty sure he forgot. But so you're missing mom tonight, huh?
Yeah. Mom's doing paperwork.
It's good. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to another fantastic episode of the Natural Born Hunter podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my co-host, Phil the Iceman Mendoza. And tonight we have a special pre-show guest, Mr. Baker Levitt. Some of you will remember him from last week's episode. We talked about the Killcliff Archery Challenge and how it's raising money and awareness for the Navy SEAL Foundation through a lot of you out there, just by shooting your bows and popping some balloons and getting it out and about. Baker, how's it been going?
Good. I'm sitting here and Anchorage, Alaska, finishing up a club sandwich in the hotel restaurant with Backstreet Boys playing on the radio. So if anyone hears that, that's not my music selection. That is the selection of the restaurant I'm dining in.
Good cover.
The bow challenge is going great. I honestly haven't had a chance to go through and tally up all the emails. There's so many of them, so we're just going to keep it going until I find some time to go through all of these emails and get it all organized and tally everything up.
So are you saying it still ends Sunday, or you're extending it past
Sunday?
No,
it is going until I decide to announce that it's over.
Wow, that's big.
Yeah, I just haven't had a chance to. I mean, the email, there's just so many emails. I just got to go through it. And it's fun. I like, it's for a good cause. It allows people to have fun and kind of show off their skills and all that stuff. So why stop a good thing, you know?
So I know you don't have a lot of time and haven't been looking through them all, but have you seen any of the Natural Born Hunter listeners out there?
I have. I don't know the names off the top of my head, like I said, because there's been so many of them. But, there's been a ton. The best one so far is still the lady with the recurve bow from 100 yards, which is completely insane to me.
I'll be honest. I had two arrows, and I haven't even shot at 100 yards this year. Don't have it sighted in. Just kind of winging it. I lost both arrows and said, you know what? I'm not too worried about this because there's no way I'm going to beat that lady.
Well, actually, Jason Hansen, who's on Twitter, is Outdoor CEO.
Yep, I know the name.
Huge social media following. He drilled one from 200.
Really?
It took him a while. Like, I think maybe a dozen arrows. I mean, he was all around it there for a while, and then finally he just drilled it. It's pretty impressive.
You know who I haven't seen one from yet, Baker?
Who's that?
Our very own Phil Mendoza.
Phil Mendoza?
That's right.
What in the world?
I don't know. I don't know what the Iceman's been doing.
Phil, what's the deal, dude?
Hey, man. I'm sitting here right now with my kid, feeding my one-year-old. Mama's doing paperwork, so I got to get my priorities straight, I know. But I will be working on it, I promise. Here, I go out, I leave again Friday to chase elk for 4 days, but I'm going to get it done before that.
Now, let me ask you this, Phil. Do you think you can go over 200 yards?
I don't know, man. That's a stretch. I can try. I don't know that I can try it at a can. I tried at a balloon.
Now, here's the thing.
Hey, go for a balloon. The balloon's fun.
You can't.
Here's the deal. Here's what I have to say about this. You're going to find a way, or you're going to find an excuse. And I believe in you, Phil Mendoza.
Hey, I'm not an excuse guy. I'll tell you that. So, like I said, I will get it done. But, yeah, we're going to stretch it out, too. I may even wear a loincloth. Who knows? Shit.
Oh.
Make it exciting, right?
That's right.
Hey, sex sells, man.
So you guys are going to be giving out a lot of money on this thing.
Yeah, happy to do it, too, man.
That's great. Now, one thing I wanted to talk a little bit about, and we didn't talk about it last time, is Killcliff, unlike some of, you know, maybe your competitors who shy away from the hunting industry, is not afraid to get into the hunting industry. What's that all about?
Well, so, you know, I hunt, several other employees of our company hunt. We're not antagonistic. Like, we're not going to go out and seek to, like, pick fights and arguments with people. And, you know, like, the last thing I want to do is pick a fight with an anti-hunter or, you know, antagonize them, because that doesn't accomplish anything. But, you know, we support what we support, and we believe in what we believe in. And that's just kind of how it is. But like I said, like, I mean, like, we're not, you know, we're not trying to, like, pick fights and antagonize people or irritate people. That doesn't accomplish anything, you know. Like, when you're dealing with stuff like that, you know, like, what's great about this country is people have the right to make decisions and have their own opinions, you know. It's First Amendment free speech. And I respect people that don't want to hunt. I respect people that do want to hunt. You know, I mean, it's your thing. If everybody was the same, it'd be a very, very boring place, and there wouldn't be any hunting, you know, because everybody would be, you know, 330 million hunters in the country. Every citizen was a hunter. So, you know, more for me and you. That's the way I look at it.
Hey, I couldn't agree more. And you, Killcliff, is one of the sponsors would be the term for tonight's guest, Gary Gillette, who runs the Hunting Film Tour.
Yep.
And how'd you guys get involved in that?
Gary and I crossed paths, and I reached out to him and liked the product he had. I went to a screening, a show in Tacoma, Washington last year, and reached out to him, and we just started talking on the phone, and next thing you know, we kind of partnered up. Gary's a really great guy. He's very intelligent, very experienced hunter. He lives in Alberta. And awesome guy, and just has a vision, and he's fulfilling that. And the hunting film is amazing. Like, I highly recommend every person listening to this, if they have the opportunity, go out and see one of the shows. You're looking at 10 to 12, it's a collection of 10 to 12 short films, user generated, user submitted, and it's just awesome. Like, the quality and the cinematography and the stories that are told, I mean, it's just great. You know, you look at all the other sponsors that are involved, like Sitka, Kimber, Yeti, Boone and Crockett Club, Sheep Foundation, Kennetrek Boots, Vortex Optics, and there's a couple others that I'm drawing a blank on. But, you know, you go to the show screenings, and there's raffle giveaways at intermission. Yeah, you know, they give away a Sitka jacket and, like, tons of hats and T-shirts and all kinds of good stuff, man. It's a good time. Like, you're hanging out with other hunters. Like, everybody's there for the same reason. Very, very much entertaining and just good stuff. Like, really awesome. Highly recommend. And then Gary's great. Like, very super knowledgeable hunter. Ask him about his big black bear this year. Thing was a behemoth. And he's super knowledgeable about bear hunting, deer hunting, just everything. Sheep, you know. Moose, caribou, the whole nine. Like, he's done it all.
Awesome. So will Killcliff be getting more involved in the hunting industry?
Yeah, that's the plan. You know, outdoor hunting industry, absolutely. You know, we started off. You know, we're big in the CrossFit space, and we like niche markets. So for us, like, I think bow hunting is definitely an avenue we'd want to pursue. Bow hunting is awesome. Shooting a bow is super cool. You know, I don't want to say anybody can shoot a gun because that's not true. I've missed plenty of animals with guns, with a rifle. But, you know, just something about bow hunting and, you know, the bow challenge kind of woke everyone up, you know, to show that there's a culture there and there's a community there. And those are the two things. If you want to be successful and you want to go into a space, that's what you have to have in that space is culture and community. And bow hunting has that. So, yeah, that's probably more than likely. Well, it is one of our verticals that we'll be exploring over the next 6 months for sure.
Awesome. So everyone out there, if you haven't, please take the time to take the shot, film it, record it, tag Killcliff, tag us in it, you know, post it up on Facebook, Instagram, wherever you're putting it, and make sure you get it out there. It's a good cause, great cause. We're going to stay on this, I guess, until Baker shuts it down and make sure it keeps getting pushed out there.
Yeah, and also leave a review on iTunes for this podcast.
There you go.
You got to ask for the review, man. Always ask for the review.
Ask for the review. I'm learning things. I don't ask for a lot on this podcast. Help out the Navy SEALs. That's what we need.
There you go. And
help
and
Killcliff help
leave the a review for this podcast on iTunes. It'll bump it up in the rankings.
Will it really? Awesome.
Yep, absolutely. That's what the algorithm's mostly based on is ranking, is reviews.
Is it really?
Absolutely.
All right, everybody, please do Phil and I a favor and head on over to iTunes and leave us a very nice review, especially for the Iceman.
Absolutely. All right, guys, listen, my check's here. I got to run. It was great talking to y'all, and look forward to hearing from you. And everybody get out there and get your bows out and get out your balloons. And my advice is blow the balloon up as big as possible. Put a lot of air in it, man.
That's great advice. Have a great night, Baker. Thanks for coming up.
All right. Have a good one. Later.
Welcome, everybody, to the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, as always, joined by my lovely co-host, Phil, the Iceman Mendoza.
Lovely, lovely. Yeah. What's up, Will?
Not much. You know, I'm in a good mood. I'm in a good mood tonight. I'm feeling good. It's been a shitty hard work week, but I've been staying optimistic throughout the whole thing, and I'm just feeling good. I'm in a good mood, good place.
Well, short week, so it's all good, man. So exciting guest tonight, man. What do you got to say about our guest? We had a little trouble getting connected on our end, but
yeah, this should have been done a week ago, but unfortunately, due to your and my inferior technology capabilities, it's coming a week later than we would have liked, but tonight we are joined by Gary Gillette, who, for those of you who have heard of him, you are already aware that he is the guy behind the Hunting Film Tour, which is a very cool, I'm guessing you can assume by the name, it's a hunting film tour where they get together a lot of really great hunting films, and they take them out on the road for y'all to watch. Gary, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great, guys. Thanks a lot for inviting me to join you.
Yeah, no, we're looking forward to having you on, and you know, I've poked around the website that you guys you have out, and I just got to compliment you guys. It's very to the point, very clean. You guys got some trailers for all the current video selections you have out there. But before we get too much in depth to that, why don't you give us a little bit of background on the Hunting Film Tour and maybe how you guys came to be and where you're at in the process of your big picture.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's a kind of a fun story, actually. You know, it's been a work in progress. You know, people just see sort of the snapshot in time, but it's been a work in progress. It's been taking place for the better part of 10 years. And although it's only been launched for 3 years live and on the road, there's been a lot of work behind the scenes to kind of understand the market and pull all the right people together and the right management team and the right content. And, you know, it really revolved around the evolution of technology and camera gear and the evolution of the television space. So there's a lot of elements in play that have facilitated the film tour and what you're seeing today. So, you know, it kind of all spawned, you know, like I said, about 10 years ago when I grew up in the ski world here in Calgary, and I always went to the Warren Miller ski films at the Jubilee Auditorium. And one day while slaving away in the corporate world, in the oil and gas or energy industry, I just kind of dropped a cold call to the Warren Miller studios in Boulder, Colorado, with the idea, why don't they expand, or, you know, I wanted to expand that sort of film genre or film tour space into the fly fishing and hunting worlds, which are two of my passions. And that phone call, I luckily got through, and I talked to a guy, and his response was, you know, it's kind of your lucky day. I get, you know, 10 phone calls like this a day sort of thing. And, you know, rarely do people get a chance to get past the secretary or gatekeeper. And it was interesting because he had been given the responsibility to grow from 1 to 3 tours at the time. And, you know, that introduction led to him taking an interest in what I had to say. I had, you know, the business case built and some facts and figures that caught their attention. And ultimately, those discussions led to a meeting a month later. He flew up to Calgary to meet me and kind of proofed out whether it was the real deal or not. And, you know, that led ultimately to him and another fellow leaving Warren Miller. And we purchased a small tour. It was in its second year, called the Fly Fishing Film Tour at the time. It was sort of a defunct, failing tour. And they picked it up, and we used it as the testing ground kind of to build our thesis in this outdoor space beyond the ski world. And the fly fishing industry had just been, you know, I'd say it's 6 or 7 years ahead of hunting in terms of cinematography, quality of storytelling, that conservation arena meshed with media. And, you know, they've grown that film tour to sort of be, it's the pinnacle of the fly fishing world in terms of media space. It's got a huge following. They did just under 170 cities this year they toured. So that built the platform for Hunting Film Tour. We had got the office established, all the right people in place, the management team, all the systems, access to all the road crews and editors and everything that's required to run in this space. So as hunting television evolved, it opened up the door for us to bring a high-quality product back to the grassroots level, and that's what the film tour is all about, is really, you know, kind of breaking that 30-minute television mold and, you know, getting people together under one roof for an evening of celebration with some great films and some cold beers and some cool swag giveaways and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I haven't had the opportunity to attend one of your productions, but like I said, just looking at the presentation and some of the partnerships you guys have with, you know, the organizations that support conservation, like the Mule Deer Foundation and Ducks Unlimited, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. I mean, it seems like you guys are definitely the cream of the crop when it comes to basically that traveling type of film presentation.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been really blessed, to be honest with you. The tour kind of grew in energy beyond just myself, and it brought a lot of the right people together at the right time. Sort of the backstory on all the business partners we have. When I launched the website, I honestly didn't have any sponsors or business partners, and we said, let's just do this. Let's pull the trigger and make it happen and get it public and see where the chips fall. And it was a very interesting story. When I launched the website, within a couple of weeks, a couple of guys that host a fly fishing film tour event on the east coast of the U.S., that Chris, my partner in Boulder, never had met before, phoned me, and they said, you know, they introduced themselves and said, what Chris doesn't know is we make our living in the sales space, in the hunting media sales space, and they own a big advertising firm. And they said, we would like to represent you. And they had a whole bunch of relationships, and interestingly enough, one of their old college roommates was the owner of Sitka Gear. So that introduction led to an introduction to Sitka, and within 2 weeks I was in, you know, down in Bozeman giving a presentation to Sitka, and they signed on as the title sponsor. And they, you know, Sitka has been a leader in that outdoor film space as sort of that viral social media marketing platform for several years. And they had wanted to get into this film tour space and were looking for the right stepping stone and opportunity and people to work with to do it. just because it's outside of their manufacturing wheelhouse. So it really fell into place. And as soon as Sitka signed on board, then a handful of other key brands joined us. And, you know, we had a relationship with Yeti from the fly fishing side, and Vortex took an interest. And, you know, it's been an evolution. There's been a few brands fall off, but ultimately we're really trying to hand pick the groups that we're working with and create this basket of complementary corporations and organizations that can all kind of play off each other. And, you know, what we're doing is resonating with them. You know, the message we're taking on the road is about a conservation-oriented, you know, pro-hunting, let's tell the facts and figures of the sport we all love so much. So that's what it's all about.
Now, Gary, just to touch on something here for our audience, if you've ever heard of the Warren Miller ski to film tour that, you know, Gary's talking about, these guys he's joined forces with, it is the pinnacle of ski film and ski film tour. It has been for years and years and years and years and years. And it's interesting, you know, you didn't just set your sight on starting a film tour. You went out and found the best guys to do it with.
You know, it's kind of funny. The older you get, the more wise and humble you get. And to be honest, you have to understand where your skills lie and where the gaps are. And it's really interesting to see the evolution of this space, because there's a couple other tours that have cropped up, and on the surface, it looks very simple, you know, put some movies together and put them in a theater. And I was a bit naive when I first started in this. And I can tell you there are a million details that you're trying to manage in a very dynamic environment with people scattered all over the continent. And these events, you know, they're small, individually, relatively, but combined, it's an animal for sure. And I just, you know, decided I wanted to find the right expertise to do this correct. I believe that experience and, you know, my energy industry experience taught me that the right management team will attract the right business partners and funding. And that's, you know, really what it's all about, is getting the confidence of the executives of all the people we're working with to steward and shepherd their conservation dollars and their marketing dollars, and do it properly and do it professionally. And I needed the right team to do that. So that's why I reached out to that group, and it worked out very well.
If we're years behind fly fishing, right? How many years say we are behind like skiing or climbing videos?
It's funny, you know, like, I mean, you guys are skiers too. How long have we been watching great ski films? You know, I'd say, I mean, those really epic ski films with
Richard Vaz,
and, you know,
with
it's the been in 15
right?
years that it's just been off the hook, eh?
So you think we're about 15 years behind?
I'd say behind skiing, yes. But what's really interesting, it's funny because the cost of the productions that we had seen in the ski world before were in the millions of dollars. I know what the budgets and stuff of those films were, and the model, the business model. It was completely outside of the realm of possibility in the hunting arena. Nobody's going to go and spend $1.5 million to make a 1.5 hour special in the hunting industry. It hasn't happened yet, you know. But with the digital revolution, you know, the compression technology and your average DSLR camera, video capable today, is like a $100,000 studio camera 10 years ago, you know. So it's rapidly evolved where you can now get aerial shots with a $1,000 drone that used to take $2,000 an hour chopper time. So it's opened up this huge realm of possibility for the average amateur or semi-professional filmmaker that wants to tell a story. And what we've created is a legitimate platform for those stories to be told. There's some amazing stuff happening right now that, you know, is being produced on a shoestring.
What is your favorite trend you see going on right now in hunting films, or, you know, hunting film, television, that whole thing?
It's kind of interesting. That's a good question, actually. And the thing that I really like are, if you see this evolution of this media space, and a lot of guys are trying to copy that message of why we hunt and this real feel-good family-type oriented message, which is a good message, but in my opinion, it's been overdone. What I really love is when people focus on a couple things, like really genuine personalities or stories about people that are doing extraordinary things, and they're just average unsung heroes that no one's ever heard of. And another one that, well, there's two other things that resonate very loudly with an audience that I can just see, and when I see the audience's reaction, one is any real interesting conservation piece. where the animal or the species or a story of recovery is the feature of the film and not a person, not, you know, some high five and kill shot type thing. You know, it's all about, like we had one there, Tyler Johnerson, we had his cat film on last year, and it was all about cats and houndsmen and the importance of houndsmen and the role of conservation of mountain lions. And people just loved that film. It was really cool, you know. And I'd say the third thing that's the hardest thing to get in a film that you just can't script is just real pure, genuine humor that's unscripted and raw. And it's so rare. And when it happens, the whole audience is cracking up, and it's kind of a special moment. It's really hard to find.
You know, I think that that would have been my big thing is the whole humor.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that's one thing that those other sports have an edge over hunting with.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of getting a lot of kind of dirtbags and bums in those sports who, you know, make their way through the world just, you know, BSing and telling jokes and stuff. You know, that's kind of how they're sliding through. You know, hunting is a lot of seriousness, it seems now. A lot more serious.
I believe it's going to be an evolution, and I think you're nailing it right on the head. Everybody's trying to be so serious and copy, and people are kind of copying each other, right? So you're getting this huge serious edge to it all. And I believe there's going to be an evolution where you get this next younger generation of joystick gamers that come up and discover the outdoors. And they're kind of those like baggy pant wearing straight trucker cap brim,
flat brim
guys
that
are going to be like out high five and killing it, having fun, you know, and just filming their adventures.
I talked with you a little bit last week, and since talking to you, I've gotten pretty motivated on the hunting film side of things, and I've talked with Phil and some other guys, and my goal is going to be to make a film worthy of being on the tour next year, or, you know, make a film next worthy of being on the tour the following year, rather. So, you know, my 2 years out. But anyways,
sure.
I've already figured out what I'm really going to do is rip off my favorite climbing and ski movies and just translate it all into the hunting world.
That's cool. That's a great idea. You know, we purposely try and choose a real contrast when we construct the show reel, you know, and I'll tell you some of the most interesting reactions I've seen. You can't script what an audience is going to love. One of the most popular films and the funniest guy is a guy that he took all his old home movie footage and he did it with an old Hi-8 camera. It's not fancy. There's no opticopters. There's no red cameras or, you know, special lenses or depth of field control. But what he was a master at was telling a real genuine story, and he was really good at narrating the experience and sharing it and doing it with humor. And you don't necessarily need all the high-tech whizzy gadgets, but when I take a film like that and bookend it with the real high-tech stuff, it creates a real neat range of emotion in watching those different pieces. And that's what we're striving to do when we put the film tour together. And I know you and I talked a little bit about your story idea, and I can honestly say it's a great story. Being from Western Canada, I had never heard of the experience that you mentioned and some of the statistics you shared, and I think it would be a real special thing to share publicly with an audience for sure.
And dick jokes.
Yeah.
To the right crowd. To the right crowd.
You'll have to have just a special little warning come up before my film.
I think we'd have to have
the
main audience
the theater.
We have to have the main audience leave the theater and then reopen the doors for the adult crowd.
So we got no ratings on the film, so there's no R stuff allowed.
Perfect. It'll be worse than that.
Yeah.
He said no R's. This is NC-17.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's
cool. When does the season usually start for the tour, and when do you kind of have to wrap it up before you start looking at new submissions for the following season? When does that kind of, what's the time frame on your tour?
You know, we've had a couple of schools of thought, and the way we've been running it is we've been kind of launched the tour sort of August 1st in Bozeman, the premier there, and, you know, hometown of Kennetrack and Sitka, and there's a few brands there that we deal with. Excuse me. And, you know, the tour's grown to the point where we split it this year and we had some conflicts in the schedule. It's always been our train of thought that winter's a good time as well, you know, when people are itching to kind of scratch the hunting itch and get out of the house when it's cold and have a chance to do something fun. So we've had a lot of success. Last year, we launched the Canadian tour in the winter months, Jan, Feb, March. And this year, we split the U.S. tour because of growth in half. We did about two-thirds of the cities we did this summer. It's going to wrap up here toward the end of September in terms of our hosted shows. And then my crews will hit the road again in Jan, Feb, March in the northwest corner of the U.S. and in the Canadian, Western Canada region. In terms of content, we put our feelers out in the new year. So we let guys, you know, all the filmmakers are out hunting now and getting their show reels filled up. And they'll start editing at the end of hunting season. And then we put the call out for submissions for trailers in January, right in the new year. And then start, you know, we go through the trailers, kind of pick the best chance of success. And then we reach out to those filmmakers and say, can you have your, you know, unpolished piece in by this date and the finished piece in by this date if it's chosen. So that's sort of the process. And we're aiming to assemble the show reel for next year's tour in June. So we give ourselves about a two-month cushion going into August to deal with all the glitches and technical issues and stuff like that.
So where do people who would be interested in submitting their films, how would they get a hold of you, or who do they get a hold of, rather?
You know, it's real easy. You just go to our website. At the top of the navigation banner on the homepage, it says Submit Film. It has all the dates and key technical data, key dates, how to submit it. You can submit it just through the online form with a link, or you can just email me directly from the contact page. It's really simple, and we encourage submissions from any and all people. You know, it could be the average amateur home filmmaker right to the professional TV producer or filmmaker. I kind of make a point of championing the underdog. I get a lot of submissions from a lot of people, and if I see something where it's really genuine from a young guy or girl or something really neat that don't have a professional presence in the industry, I try and really, you know, babysit it along and see if I can get it to be on the show reel. Because I think it's a really cool opportunity for people that have made the effort and may not have, you know, a leg up in the industry or, you know, all the funding that some people do and stuff like that. So
giving them a break.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. You know, there's a young guy on our tour this year with his Whitetail film, and you know, you and I chatted about it last week. It's such a cool story. It's a young guy that was just, he's been challenged with health issues his whole life and just overcame insurmountable odds. And, you know, one of the highlights of his life has been, you know, arrowing a 190 plus inch whitetail that he set his sights on getting with a bow, and he did it. And that's a pretty tall task, you know, and the fact he did it by himself on camera was really cool. So, you know, we worked with him through a couple revision and editing process to get his little film worthy of being on the show reel, and I think it's a really cool story to share. You know, it's really neat.
Cool. So, kind of changing the subject here. Is it your birthday today?
Yeah, it is.
Happy birthday!
Beauty of social media. Thanks, man. I suddenly have 210 new friends wishing me happy birthday today. It's been overwhelming.
I saw that earlier, and I said, "Hey, I think I'm gonna have to bring that up."
35 again.
I never wish people happy birthday on Facebook. Always in person or call or podcast.
Yeah, it's funny. Eh? No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
So you, where exactly do you you live now? You're in Canada, obviously, right?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Calgary, and I reside in Calgary right now. It's about 3.5 hours north of the Montana border, 4 hours north. So it's a great province, you know. Where, you know, ultimately one of my big drivers is where I have great hunting opportunity, and this province it's pretty awesome. You know, there's 7 species of world-class critters you can chase here with a lot of over-the-counter tags that every year you can get into the chance at real legitimate record book critters just with your archery gear, you know, and long seasons and really great opportunity. But so
what's in season right now, or where are you get gearing up for?
You know, if I to sum it all up for Alberta, on the opener to August 25th, you go for sheep up north, then you do mule deer in the prairies on the opener, or up north if you got a draw. And you do elk or antelope third week of September. And then you get into October, you start chasing sheep again. And then in November, it's all about whitetails. And in the spring, it's all about black bear. And, you know, you can throw in a moose in there. But, you know, sheep's a real big one, too, in October, all season. But, you know, guys really focus the last week of October on it.
Which type of sheep are you guys chasing up there?
You know, it's pretty cool. It's changed dramatically with the population growth in Alberta, but my whole life you've been able to hunt every year over the counter tag for two plus months for bighorn sheep.
Really?
You know, I live 45 minutes from the Canmore Bow Zone. That's where, you know, guys like Chuck Adams, you know, all the big names, Tom Hoffman, that's where they all arrow their bighorn for their super slam. I've killed a couple of rams there with archery gear, and then I killed a booner, you know, an hour from my house in what we call Kananaskis country, which is bordering the Bow Zone. It's just a big mountain, a couple big mountain units in southern Alberta that, you know, borders Banff Park and Spray Lakes Park, and there's some really big rams in there. And, you know, it's unfortunate the way it's going, and, you know, it's going to be undrawn the next couple of years, I'm almost certain, but just to have the ability to go out over the counter and, you know, sheep hunting is truly about the experience hike in those mountains. It's awesome, you know.
Yeah, I got to do my first bighorn sheep hunt this year here in Colorado last month, and it was great. I shot a mid 150s ram, but it was, like you said, the experience. It's hard to put into words.
Yeah.
Just that experience.
Yeah, it's a needle in a haystack game, you know, and. You know, everyone, I think a lot of guys, when they start sheep hunting, that's the kind of the ram they get. And it's an awesome experience. And once you get one under your belt and you start focusing, like, you know, I'm going to try and get a 170s plus inch sheep. And then it's a 180 plus inch sheep. And then once you do that, it's like, okay, you're pretty much hunting the rest of your life to hold out for a 190 plus ram. And it's all about putting the miles on and just savoring your time in the mountains and a break from the office.
Yeah, that's it. And it's, I don't know. I mean, I was fearful that I would get the bug to hunt sheep, knowing that it can be a very expensive animal to pursue. And depending on, you know, I drew my tag here. It took me 8 years in Colorado applying. Well, now the way the system works in Colorado, I can't apply for 5 years. I can apply for a lottery desert bighorn. We do have a very select number of tags there, but and then I get back into the draw cycle, which could take 8 to 10 years. So potentially for Colorado, I'm 12 to 15 years before I might draw again.
You'll be going up on your walker.
That's it. Hunting the country that I mean, we hunted a true wilderness unit here where there was no riding ATVs up and glassing it. No, you had to hike in and it was, you know, 5 to 7 miles worth of elevation gain and then you're up hunting. So that specific unit, I don't think I'll hunt in 15 or 18 years because I hope to be in decent enough shape to do that, but it's, you know, it's one of those things that, I'm going to be actively pursuing within the next 10 years of my life, at least another tag somewhere. That's like you said, now I'm looking for that, you know, that next challenge in that arena of sheep.
I play the tag game in the U.S. too, and, you know, the odds on drawing tags is just so slim, it's incredible. And, you know, I'm focusing on units now that, you know, I like the Missouri Breaks in Montana and some real special units that if I get one in a lifetime, I'll be thrilled, you know. But I'm looking for that buster ram that, you know, either Cadman or the Breaks are going to produce. And, you know, the experience of killing a ram is, it's amazing, but unfortunately, there's just so much pressure on the resource, and I have all my own opinions on it, but it's been romanticized so much through social media and all the hype and promotion that guys are missing the experience of sheep hunting. They're just out there to kill a sheep and just say they killed a sheep, you know, for the sake of a slam or whatever. And, you know, it's a way cooler experience to see a legal ram and let it walk because it's a 5 or 6 year old, you know, and just let it grow. And my own personal rule of thumb for all the sheep that I've killed is I'm trying to kill rams that are 10 years of age or older. I don't care how big they are. It's an age thing for me. And I think that's a neat way to approach it because it preserves the opportunity for more people and more access to tags. And if everybody did that, it'd be, you know, a really cool way to do it.
Well, and you know, I from the limited experience I have with dealing with other sheep hunters, it is a different, I wouldn't say a different breed of hunter, but it's it's not your average, you know, like Colorado, for example, where I live. You know, we've got the most accessible areas for elk, for over-the-counter elk, and there is units that are, you're lucky to see anything over a raghorn 4x, you know, 4x anything on the elk, because anything that's legal that walks, people are shooting at it.
Shooting them, yeah.
And on the sheep side, you know, I shot the biggest ram that I got into. I was able to tag out on the biggest ram that I saw. Well, I take that back. We saw one ram that was probably in the 10-year-old range, about 2 miles out, that we just never got close enough to. But I just think that, yeah, that the breed of sheep hunter that I've dealt with, I think it's not far-fetched to believe that, you know, the majority of guys are hoping for that same, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, management practices, but I think that most people are not far off that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very complex subject, and BC, Alberta, and the North are grappling with it right now through the Wild Sheep Foundation and various, you know, biological studies and reviews, and trying to understand what are the best policies and regulatory approaches to managing the sheep herds in light of the, you know, increased pressure, all the different user groups. It's not an easy subject, but it's a very fascinating one. And the more you get into sheep hunting, the more you get into it, and it's pretty cool.
You know, here's the thing. You know, sheep hunting, I think, magnifies a lot of things that go on in other types of hunting. And it's kind of like in hunting, and especially in sheep hunting, it's more about a spiritual and physical gain being out there. But if you compromise the process, you're an asshole when you start out, and you're an asshole when you get back.
Yeah, you can pretty much say that about that. That rule applies to a lot of things, and I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah, it's so cool. You know, I mean, we've had some epic sheep films on the tour, to be honest with you. The guys at SeaCat Creative are doing a great job of, you know, knocking some dull sheep. They got a dull sheep film coming out that I don't know if we're going to have it on the tour or not, but I can almost guarantee it's going to be in setting the industry standard. You know, they had two or three camera angles on archery kills on dull sheep up north in the Mackenzies, and it's really cool stuff, you know. And that's what I mean, like, guys are taking this to the nth degree now, and the level of sophistication in capturing the experience and the storytelling is going to be really, really cool. And that's where I think we're going to mature very quickly to that high-end ski film quality.
So I've got, I mean, not to ditch the sheep subject, it's always, you know, I always love talking about that, but what's your next, you know, favorite animal to pursue, assuming sheep was, you know, is that, you know, ideal critter that you'd be able to chase? But what's next up in the woods?
It's really hard for me to pick, to be honest. Like, right now, being in the office is absolutely crushing me when I know the elk are bugling on the ridgetops. It's like, it's happening right now as we speak, you know. Elk are an amazing archery animal. It's just so vocal and personal, the interaction with them. But, you know, for me, it's all about the time of year. It's kind of funny, but I have a real thing for black bears, to be honest. And it's kind of a species that it's kind of unsung. But when you approach bear hunting with the same vigor that you would sheep hunting or big whitetails, and you truly just try and focus on gothic, mature Boone and Crockett bears that are, you know, 10 plus, 15 plus years old, they're as rare as hen's teeth. And the adventure in pursuing them and figuring them out and finding them is as exciting as any other species. And that's kind of a springtime ritual that me and some friends do and go pretty serious at. But, you know, it really depends on the time of year. You know, another example is, I know in the States, and especially in the eastern U.S., like, whitetails are the crown jewel of the hunting world. Everybody relates to it. And being in Alberta, we've been blessed with so much hunting opportunity and, you know, access to private land that you don't have to pay. It's illegal to pay landowners here. But I'm taking a different approach, just like the U.S. And I recently bought a little ranch, and I'm going to manage it specifically for big whitetails. You know, I bought it right in the heart of the big whitetail genetics north of Edmonton. And over the next few years, I want to turn it into a quality deer management property where we can get that legacy sort of, you know, that legacy designation. And there's nobody in Canada hardly approaching hunting like that, where they intensively manage land for wildlife and, you know, make the habitat as suitable as possible. And, you know, it's not for agriculture value. It's for strictly for wildlife value. So that's going to be a real fun project.
Why do you think no one in Canada or very few people in Canada don't approach it that way?
You know, I just think because comparatively, we just don't have the population base, and it's starting to happen now. It's getting very competitive for good hunting areas. But, you know, previously, you know, I mean, I'm not talking that far back, 20 or 30 years, you know, you could bugle elk off the road in Canmore in the bow zone. Now you don't hear a bugle ever. You know, there's just the elk have learned. It's just the pressure. You know, we've been so blessed with opportunity. You haven't had to go to that level of sophistication to be successful. You could be that average dude with, you know, Kmart camo and roll out with no experience with an elk call and you'd get a response. Well, it's not like that anymore. You know, and same with whitetails, you know, the big deer guys are putting a lot of homework into and they're really working hard at it. It's just, you know, also I think it's because information is just so freely available on the internet now. And, you know, just the learnings that you accrue through all the information from everyone else that's out there doing it, it ups everybody's game.
What's the biggest mistake or the worst thing you've ever had to you while hunting?
You know, it's kind of funny, but I'd say one of the worst things that's happened, I was out mule deer hunting last week, and I was, you know, I went into an area I'd never been into. I put five deer and two bucks to bed at dusk. The next morning, I found them at 5:30. I put them to bed again. I started my stalk at 11 a.m., and as I was stalking them on private access ground, like, I mean, many sections of large, large private access ground, huge coulee system in a horseshoe shape, a white diesel pickup, guys that were hunting, they call it hunting, but it's not hunting, driving the coulee edge, a very steep 200 yards down to the bottom, driving the edge and getting out every 100 yards with their bow, peeking over, trying to look for deer. And they're driving on native prairie grass where they don't have permission. I was irate, absolutely flipping my lid, irate, standing up, double fingers, swearing at them. I hate to even admit it, but I was mad.
Giving them the thumbs
and
up.
That's the, oh, yeah. Yeah, proverbial thumbs up. And, you know, it's almost a joke to think that guys think that is hunting and that it's a quality experience. And that's the kind of thing that this film tour is all about breaking the mold on. It's absolutely trying to show people that hunting is a great activity. There's a legacy there. There's a heritage. There's a conservation foundation that's bigger than most people will ever fathom. It's the foundation and grandfather of conservation on this continent. And those people that call themselves hunters that act like that, they're just doing everybody such a disservice because that's the stereotype, you know. And that's the mold I'm trying to break, to be honest with you.
I think that's a great mold to break. If you were to make a film yourself, right, and you could say you had like 10, 15 minutes, what would be the message you most wanted to convey to your audience?
I have no question that I would like to partner up with Ducks Unlimited, Boone and Crockett Club, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Wild Sheep Foundation, and I would like to tell the story. Boone and Crockett has a small little leaflet that's free that they give out, and it has a timeline of conservation in North America. It's absolutely fascinating, and 99% of people, even the ones that hunt, don't understand the role that these organizations have played in building the opportunity that we enjoy today. It's incredible. You know, people that think, you know, the emotional heartstring messages you see on TV from PETA or World Wildlife Fund or all these organizations, those aren't the true conservation groups. It's hunters, hunting dollars, excise taxes, all the regulatory policy that we see around how money is shifted from license sales and gear taxes and stuff that drive the conservation movement. That's what's given rise to all of the, you know, big wildlife populations and success stories we see today that in turn give us the opportunity to enjoy hunting and being out there. To me, that's the most important message anybody can tell. And, you know, the farther we get down this technology path and the bigger the cities grow, the further we get removed from that message and that reality. And I think that's what, you know, the most important thing to me is.
Phil, write that down. There's an idea we can steal.
I already did.
Good. I would welcome you to steal that one, and I'll give you the contact for each of those organizations for you to do that.
I know a guy who might pull something like that off. It wouldn't be me myself.
It's a big nut, you know, and it can be done though.
Oh yeah, you know, and if it's done right, it would be kind of almost the hero of the hunting world films.
Yeah,
you know, cause I think that's a message hunters. A lot of them will know it, you know, in America, and I don't know if it's the same in Canada. You learn a lot of the kind of conservation and where it comes from in your hunting safety or bow hunting safety classes. But to actually have it there where you could say, here, you look for yourself and you tell me that, you know, hunters aren't the true conservationists would be a big, big opportunity for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's on people's radar, and there's attempts being made at that message, but I have yet to see it wrapped up real cohesively, and it's strictly just based on budget constraint from various organizations, you know. But it's really fun to be working with the people that are running these organizations, the big conservation groups. They're very talented executives, you know, and it's evolving where they're trying to get that brand message out there and that historical perspective wrapped up in real high-end media like this. And that's what this is all about. That's why they're participating with me. So I think you're going to see more and more of that as, you know, time rolls by here.
So we're going to need $1 million in chopper too.
Do it. You got a place on the show reel. Anytime you guys can hang a red epic off the front of a helicopter.
Might be a while, but
what do you mean? The podcast isn't killing it. Seven figures. Get on it, guys.
Yeah, I know. You're telling me maybe you should give me the number for some of those guys you rattled off.
It's on the list. Just might take a little while to get there.
Great.
Here's the thing, though. You said helicopter. I'm thinking ultralight, and I'll hang Phil over the end with his iPhone.
Yeah. I see a YouTube famous video with 5 million hits in your future.
Yeah, it'll be the biggest hunting conservation film of all time.
Darwin Award.
Yeah. So what would be your recommendation to people getting into, say, we'll even open this to fly fishing, to hunting or fly fishing? What would be some steps to say maybe some guy who's listening to this because they're more on the, you know, CrossFit side or athlete side and they're curious about hunting and fly fishing?
You know, I'd say the easiest way is to surround yourself with real knowledgeable people. You know, I grew up a city kid. I didn't have anybody to teach me, to be honest with you. And it amazes me, even locally here in Alberta, my experience is I'd say 90% of my friends that are very avid bow hunters aren't a member of their local, you know, provincial fishing game club or bow hunting organization. And to be honest, it's a great peer group, and it's the easiest way to get exposure with some really qualified, experienced people. And it's a lot of fun, you know, like they have some really cool awards programs. It allows you, one thing I've learned over time is you get involved in these organizations and it allows you to structure your approach to hunting. And it goes beyond just kind of hacking around to giving you an idea on, you know, there's certain goals each year that you set once you kind of mature in your hunting career, and I'm going to target this species and try and shoot record book in these different categories. And it becomes a lot of fun and it gives you something to strive for. And I think anything in life, if you set objectives and goals, it just makes it that much more, you know, interesting and challenging and rewarding when you achieve it. And to be honest, in the hunting world, there's no finish line. You know, if you shoot every species in Alberta, then it's, well, okay, what can I do in BC and what can I do in the Yukon? And pretty soon it's, what can I do in North America? And then beyond that, it's like, what can I do in Africa? And, oh my God, look at all the Capra and Ovis species across the world. And, you know, it just never ends, right? So it's whatever your budget and time and ambition will allow is your next goal. So it just keeps growing if you get into that sort of environment where you're surrounded by some really neat people in these groups.
Yeah, two out of three of those I'm okay with, but that whole budget thing,
I know.
Yeah.
It's a downer, isn't it?
Yeah, the ambition's there, and you know, I even make the time, but the budget thing, that could get difficult.
Well, it's pretty awesome. Like places like Colorado, Alberta, that's the beauty, is you don't have to be a mega millionaire to enjoy world class experience. Like,
Don't tell anybody that.
No. I know. So that's the neat thing about living where we do and the time that we do.
Well, and you know, you talked briefly about the whitetail thing, and you know, the reason why whitetail is king in the United States is because a lot of people haven't elk hunted yet. So
that's truth, man.
Whether it's geography or, you know, finances. Hey, I love hunting whitetail. Don't get me wrong, and I'm kind of a newer whitetail hunter, if you will. You know, over the last 4 or 5 years, but I've been elk hunting all my life, and I believe it, man. I mean, I've met a lot of people in the South and the Midwest through archery tournaments, and I can't tell you that the conversation always opens up about, man, I want to get out there elk hunting. I want to get out there elk hunting. And
yeah, for sure.
That's like, you know, you being in Canada, there's even just that many more species, like you said, that it's that much more accessible for you. So let's leave that topic alone. I mean, yeah, there's opportunities in Colorado, Canada. But let's change the subject quickly.
The elk is king in the West. It's been really interesting meeting all the guys from Bozeman, you know, like the Sitka crew and the CCAT creative guys and Kennetrek. Like, elk is absolutely king in Montana. It's like religion. You know, when elk comes around in September, it's pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, I've got my tag open right now. I was up last weekend. Elk are just starting to talk a little bit here, but I've got 3 days this weekend to hunt, and then I go to New Mexico next week for a New Mexico tag that I also drew. So I'm going to get my fill of elk hunting in this month. Yeah, thank you.
Congrats.
This next 2-3 weeks are going to be loaded with hopefully days in the woods chasing them.
Is that a premium tag in New Mexico?
You know, it's a wilderness tag in northern New Mexico. It's not your highly coveted Gila or, you know, some of the other units. But I've hunted the Gila with my brother. I hunted the unit right next to the tag, the unit that I drew this year, 2 years ago. And I had an opportunity on a 360-plus bull that a little further shot, you know, questionable as to take it or not take it. I took it. He ducked the string. Arrow actually bounced off his back. I had a guy with me with a high dollar camera. I mean, it was a, you know, not your high dollar SLRs, but it was a XA20 kind of camcorder. So very quality picture. We got to see it. And I tell you what, there is big elk in those wilderness units in the north central part of New Mexico. And that's where I'll be hunting again. So I'm looking for a redemption this year. That's
good for you.
I mean, yeah, excited to see
the least. Yeah, good luck with that. That's cool.
Thank you. Will is just smiling. You can't see him, Gary. I can see him on the other side here on Skype, and Will's chomping at the bit to get out here and hunt some elk with me next year.
That's the goal, you know, that goal I have, and the goal of making the film next year. So now I've got two big goals I got to achieve.
Yeah.
But since nothing's open here, I'm doing a lot of time scouting, and I've recently started rock climbing, so be doing a lot of that then.
Yeah, that's cool. Fun just to be out there.
Yeah, and, you know, just like anything I start, when I start it, I get all into it. So I've probably watched, like, 20 hours of climbing videos so far this week and have been getting little sleep. But it's interesting. It's because, you know, you watch other sports, you kind of pick up the things you like and don't like in filming. Because filming is filming. You know, action's action.
Yep.
I'll tell the story. One thing I heard the other day, and you might agree with this or not, I felt like maybe the hunting films are getting maybe a little too serious, a little too artsy. A guy was talking about hunting a whitetail he'd seen on some ranch or something he goes to every year, and somewhere in the talk he got to, I'm starting to lose myself, I don't know who I am anymore, and stuff along those lines. And I was like, we're still hunting, right? Like, I mean, it was like Apocalypse Now hunting film. Like, I didn't know what was going on anymore.
Getting a little melodramatic.
A little melodramatic for my taste. And I was like, you know what, that's something just hearing, it's like, too far to the left. Too far left. Got to pull it back, brother. Pull it back.
That, you know, back to that film that Brian Husky made, it was an elk film. And that, you know, that it was done on the, you know, the high eight camera. That was his message. It was called The Endless September, I think it was called. And that's how he started his story. And it was all about, you know, he was trying to draw out that, why is everybody so serious? He says, and he opened it up. He said, let's be honest, guys, like elk hunting is supposed to be fun. This is our vacation, you know? And he opens it up with all the guys sitting around the screen watching a big bull get missed, drinking a whiskey, you know? And he's like, this is what it's about. It's not all this drama and, you know, serious stuff. It's like, whatever, let's have fun with our buddies. That's why we're here. So yeah, it really resonated with people.
There's a fairly well-known ski film out there called Claim, which has the same kind of message in it. And the opening narration is like, when did everybody, after they hit a big trick or something they've never done before, just look up back at the mountain like, oh, yeah, no big deal. I do it all the time. Like, what happened to the celebration? You know, what happened to the high five? What happened to the arms in the air? And it's like, you got to claim it when you do it. So, you know, it happens in all sports. You know, people start to think too seriously.
Yeah, I agree.
You won't have that on this podcast, though, Gary. I guarantee that.
I'm getting that vibe.
Yes, very, very laid back, very anything goes type of conversation. This one's been staying on the tracks pretty much from the get go, though. I will admit, Gary, we've got off the tracks a couple times where it was, I didn't know if we were going to get it back. I mean, it was way out there.
She gets a little offside.
Yeah, you know, but if it goes there, we just let it go there. So that's what, well, you know, we're not much to fight it. It's just casual conversation. If it happens to end up in left field, I think Will and I both agree it. Maybe that's where it's meant to be for a little bit.
Sometimes play ball where it is.
But
Will and I already had that discussion last week, and he assured me it wasn't recording. So,
yeah, it's too bad he wasn't recording.
A lot of things I'm not allowed to bring up because when Gary told them to me on the phone, he made me promise.
Yeah, that's right.
I should have never called him. I could have got this out on the air.
Yeah, we've sent out some requests to some other industry personnel about, you know, getting him on the podcast, and we've been very blunt with saying, we don't want the edited, you know, politically correct, walk the proper line. We want the real, the dirty, just be real with us. You know, we want the campfire stories with the guys, and that's what we want to hear, because that's what, like we just talking about with the, you know, the other videos, that's what hunting, when you're out at hunting camp and enjoying each other's company and telling the story and hearing the same hunting stories maybe a buddy's told five or six times over, you know.
Yep.
That's what we want to hear. We want to hear that real passion and that real life enthusiasm with what happens. And whether if there happens to be a couple F-bombs dropped in the process or somebody gets made fun of, hey, you know what? That's part of the deal.
Exactly. All right, you want the truth? Here's the truth.
Yeah.
If you want to get rich and famous, don't start a film tour.
Yeah,
there's my advice.
Hey, I've got one better for you. If you want to be rich and famous, don't open an archery shop.
That too, or a podcast.
It's all about the love of the game right now.
Hey,
yeah, no, that's what's pretty cool. The best part about this whole film tour is, you know, all the amazing people I've met and how passionate they are about the industry, the organization or company they represent. Like, people truly are dedicated and enjoy what they're doing. It's pretty cool to see.
Have you seen any, say, smaller videos or anything lately that may have made you tear up or choke up recently?
That's a loaded question, isn't it?
A little bit.
I'm saying that just because he shared one with me last couple days ago. What was the name of that?
What was the name of it?
Self Soul Media, which I know they've been on the fly fishing film tour in the past. But, yeah, I mean, it was crazy. That's the kind of talent that's coming to the table with these cameras. And it's just like, it blows you away how people are approaching certain subjects or certain stories and can move emotion like that with a camera. It's amazing.
It's all right. For those of you who are not aware of what Gary and I are talking about, there's a little film called Denali that was made by a guy, and it's about his dog. And it's a really well done, well shot video. It's about 7 minutes long. I'll make sure it's up on our Facebook page at the time we post this. I sent it to Phil because I wanted to see him cry, but he hasn't watched it yet. And everyone I've sent it to, Gary, has said the same thing back to me. Why are you sending me this? You're trying to make me cry. And it's like,
yeah
I am.
No, I really, it's funny, you know, prior to being in the space, I enjoyed things like that, but you didn't really appreciate them, you know. And now after I've looked at so many films and talked to so many people that are trying to make content, you realize what an amazing talent it is to be able to pull that together.
It's talent, and it's, I feel like it's the love of the subject too, the subject matter.
Yeah.
When you really love subject matter, when you're so engrossed in it that you just, I think it came off natural, very natural. It didn't seem forced. It didn't seem like it was tugging at our heartstrings. You almost felt like they were going to cry themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, but so I think he's already been through that point and passed, right? And that's what he's sharing.
And probably talent and vision or creativity, because you know, somebody can be talented with an editing software or a camera, but if they're talented, they have the vision to put to basically create what they're, you know, what they're thinking and put it on, you know, on film and edit it that way. That's where it all comes together. And I don't know. I mean, I haven't got to see that video, but I just think about other, you know, stories or other videos I've seen that are that I felt were good, and I just felt it was that. It was not only are they talented with the camera or talented, you know, behind the keyboard, it's a matter of having the vision to put it all together.
Totally. You know, you're hitting on a key subject. Like, I get asked all the time, you know, when are you going to make a movie? Why aren't you making movies? Why don't you produce content? It's like, I came to realize a long time ago, the people that make great movies, that's what they're good at. It's a skill that they've been, you know, they went to school for it. They've been evolving and learning in that space for 10, 15, 20 years. It's, you know, it's an art form that you can't just learn it overnight. You know, no different than running a film tour is a skill in itself. You know, it's a business. It's not about making content. It's about pulling all of these pieces together that kind of make everything hum behind the scenes, you know? So yeah, I've really grown an appreciation for the people that can create and take great video, see all the right shots, how to use the equipment, know how to edit, choose the right music, you know, time it correctly with that music. It's pretty cool how it can create an emotion like that.
I felt like it was simple and kind of stripped. It was beautifully shot, beautiful story being told, really well told, but also it seemed very simple.
With all your listeners for sure.
I definitely will. I got to share. Like, I already shared with my co-host, but apparently he doesn't pay attention to anything I send him anymore.
You know, that whole work thing that gets in the way during the day. It's
forget that, Phil.
Hey man, I'd love to. So if we can start getting some of those big sponsors for them, you know, we're talking about seven figures or what have you for the podcast sponsorship. Let's line it out and we'll bounce videos off each other all day.
Yeah, Gary, if you know anyone who wants to sponsor a podcast that talks about sad dog videos, send them our way.
Yeah. Okay. Good deal.
So back to the hunting, the film tour.
Yep.
So your new content will, you guys already have next year's videos kind of picked out then?
Not yet. We're going to put a call out for submissions in January, and then we'll assemble the show reel by June and then launch it again in August.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
I mean, I got about three or four films that I'm pretty sure are going to be on there already. You know, filmmakers that we've worked in the past, you know, content that Sick is producing that they're dedicating to the tour, stuff like that. You know, I've already got a real neat group reaching out to me related to the Orvis whole family and brand. They're going to do some cool stuff for us with some wing shooting that we're talking about. So, yeah, there's a few things in the works.
So then a possible addition to the tour sometime in mid to late May, potentially in Colorado, would be with the current tour that's out.
Yep, we could definitely make it work. It never fails. It doesn't matter how hard I try and plan or get ahead of it. It's a last-minute scramble every time.
Well, I wouldn't have it any other way. So it brings out the best in people.
Yeah, it does.
What would be your least favorite thing about hunting films these days? Or shows, media, I guess, any of that?
You know, I think the whole thing that's allowing us to succeed and what's paving our path, and not to knock outdoor television, because I still enjoy some shows and there's some guys producing some really good stuff. But I think what's happened, and I think it's a pretty common theme, the outdoor television space has just been saturated with some really poorly produced content. And I don't know what the statistic is today, but I know it's north of 400 shows being produced. So, 400 shows trying to produce 13 episodes a year with a payoff and a harvest on each episode, how many things can be done on a limited budget that are different? And, the core focus of those shows has typically been A, the sponsors, and B, the personality in front of the camera. And I think what's different about what we're doing is the branding is very subtle. Although we have a lot of really great business partners, our mantra isn't to smack the consumer over the head repeatedly with advertisements. Consumers are smart. They understand who's creating the quality content, what quality brands are behind it. Things are evolving, and there's a lot more credit there than I think that are due. And the second thing is, I think people are tired of watching that back-slapping, high-fiving Bubba mentality in front of the camera, and just shooting everything in sight and sort of glorifying their personality about it. And, that's probably the thing that is my least favorite that's happened in the industry with the advent of digital technology and how it kind of bastardized, producing a TV show used to be an art form that took a lot of people and a lot of talent and some scripts and writers and a lot of neat things that made it go around. And now one guy can do it with a Sony laptop and, in their basement with an editing suite and a camera. So it's changed the quality dramatically.
You think it also has something to do with the fact that people think all I got to do is make a show and I will be a hunter as my job for the rest of my life?
Yes, 100%. And I can tell you, the bigger my tour grows, the less I'm hunting. It's just a matter of fact. It baffles me, but that's the way it is. It's a business, and it just demands more of your time. And although you're in the space, it gets, it's not easy to turn a dollar at in the outdoor television space. And you're competing with a lot of very talented people that have been at it a long time. To try and go carve a dollar out of their pocket and put it into yours is not an easy thing to do.
So, I mean, you mentioned the advertising, I'm not even sure. I'm at a loss for words here. The hunting industry for televised TV shows is very much advertised-driven, because hunting shows have to purchase their time, their space on Sportsman's Channel, Outdoor Net, whatever, right? That's part of the game. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I've said this from the archery side, because I see it from a competitor standpoint to now a retailer, and I see that the archery industry kind of cannibalizes itself in the sponsorship area. And I think hunting in general does the same. Now, is there money in hunting? Yes, to some extent. I mean, if not, then why would people be in business? But there isn't, like NASCAR, for example, where you've got big corporate companies dropping big dollars for, to have their name on a race car. Or other areas, golf, other sports.
Yeah.
What do you see? Big companies like, I don't know. I mean, you see, I'm not talking about, and I'm not talking down about any of these companies, but, like archery again, I'm going to stick in that area. So you see your Hoyt Matthews or Bowtech, sponsoring a show, and you see, whatever brand of arrows or something, some camo brand. We're talking small potatoes in the area of advertising dollars. As opposed
I think bigger. You're bang on. I think relatively they're small when they're trying to spread. And that was the traditional formula, because there's so many shows or places to, for them to allocate their marketing dollars and budgets. And I think you're nailing it right on the head. And what we're trying to do is very different. And that's what's resonating with the partners I'm working with. They're trying to, what they're realizing, I think what some companies that are leading in their brand placement and brand building are doing very well is focusing their efforts. And they're not trying to take the shotgun approach with $5,000 or $10,000 here and there and everywhere. They're focusing it on high quality content, just like Sitka Films. You know, you see Yeti Films just got launched. You see Ducks Unlimited just, you know, as a result with working through some people, one of the filmmakers I was working with and his efforts internally at DU, they created DU Films. And they're focusing their efforts on dollars on creating real high quality brand messaging and content about conservation and letting it go viral through social media. And they're leveraging that free distribution in social media, as well as trying to attach it to a unique distribution platform like the film tour. So that's, I think there's some really smart people running these companies that are, it's a very silent space, and it, you know, there's a lot of different interpretations or perspectives, and the ones that are kind of moving forward and leading the industry, that's how I see they're doing it.
How much of the limitation of other bigger corporations not getting involved in the hunting industry is because of it is hunting, and there is higher up, you know, executives that don't believe in hunting, and maybe through education, through these kind of tours, how much of it do you think it's because of that?
Here's a great example. You know, look at Red Bull. They own the media space. They invented this media space, you know, in terms of today's generation and Red Bull Media House. And there's not an adventure adrenaline sport that they don't own along with GoPro, you know. And you got to ask yourself, why is Red Bull not in the hunting space? It's the biggest sport in the world. It's bigger than anything else. Budget-wise, participant-wise, you look at any statistics in North America, hunting's the biggest sport. Why are they not in that space? Because they consciously chose not to be because the executive don't believe or support it. That's why. It's just that simple. And the really cool thing is we have a partner called Killcliff that, you know, they're a legitimate nutrient replacement drink that are going to own the space. I mark my words, but they're aggressively pursuing it, and their first foray into it was the hunting film tour. You know, and the really cool thing is, and you guys touched on it already, they're the go-to drink in 2,500 CrossFit gyms across the United States. They just got into Walmart. They're coming to Canada. So, you know, I can see we just did our first film tour event in a CrossFit gym in Alaska, in Anchorage last week. We got another one going off in Washington here in a week or two. So you can see that we're going to kind of mash up this space with that elite athlete into this outdoor world, and I think it's going to be the perfect storm.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with the social media, you know, competition that they have going on, that we've actually gotten Baker on with Killcliff and you know, helping to support that with what they're doing for a good cause. You know, it's they're going about it the right way, it seems like. And like you said, Red Bull may be, you know, Goliath, but Killcliff's gaining speed and like you said, they're going about it the right way. They're building relationships and building a name for themselves, you know, that is going to grow a strong bond with a lot of people.
Yeah. I can say that's been my experience, like dealing with that executive team and with Baker in particular. It's fun. You know, he's become a friend. It's not just a high level business relationship. He's actively engaged almost daily with me on social media. He's coming up with innovative ideas on how to merge the brands together and how to leverage the film tour platform for their products and their brand placement. And it's really interesting stuff because it's all uncharted territory. It's kind of a clean slate, and you know, you try some things and they don't work, and then you try a couple things and they do, and it's fun, you know. But it's fun to see all the energy and the smart people that are engaging and kind of making it happen. It's much bigger than just me, you know.
You know, I hope his ideas he's given you are better than the ones I saw him post on Facebook for CrossFit boxes. Did you guys see that?
Have you seen Baker? I haven't met him, but he looks like a big dude.
He's huge. You looks like he'd crush my skull. But did you see the video
he put up
with
his
suggestion to CrossFit coaches and what they should do?
Yeah.
No, I didn't
you
see that.
A cigarette smoking relay course. Where an athlete has to smoke a Marlboro Red down to the filter, run out, compete in whatever, run back, and then hand off the baton. The next athlete has to smoke it, just run out and run back. So I hope he's got maybe a little bit better ideas than that. Not that it would not, you know, maybe it would be a great relay race. I don't know. I can't not get to see someone do it.
That's why I have fun working with Baker. He's got lots of funny ideas. Oh, God.
Well,
these other companies are just giving it to Killcliff. The supplement companies, I'm not going to say they're necessarily giving it to, like, Mountain Ops, who happens to be our single only show sponsor, and they're awesome people. But, you know, it's right there. It's there for the taking. And these guys, you know, like Mountain Ops and Killcliff, they seem to be gaining a lot of traction quickly.
Yeah, it's exciting to see a brand and a management team like that. You know, the guy that started Todd is a really interesting guy, too, and his backstory and being in SEAL and all that stuff. And he started it for the right reasons, and there's a, you know, there's a community and give back to the service community component. And it's a legitimate product, and they're attacking space where there's a void. So, yeah, there's a lot of neat things happening there.
Do you take any protein or supplements yourself?
You know, I have for years. It's not a specific brand that I focus on, but I just have always taken just a basic, you know, I'm not fanatical about it or anything, but I put a scoop in my smoothie in the morning of some simple greens and a protein powder. It's not, you know, I'm just trying to stay healthy, not set world records or compete at the regionals, you know.
Yeah. Well, if you happen to be looking for some high-quality, high-grain protein, Mountain Ops just came out with a new protein called Magnum. Very tasty stuff. I've had it myself. Have you tried it yet, Phil?
Not yet.
Well, let me tell you, it's good. And not only that, but right now, Gary, because you're on the show, I'm going to give you a little insider deal here. If you enter the promo code NBH20 at checkout when you buy this, I know you're going to because you enjoy being on the show so much, you will get 20% off your purchase.
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, and you know, again, can't say enough good things about the guys at Mountain Ops. You know, they're active in social media. They're eager to, build just the hunting community in general. It seems like those guys are passionate about what's going on, what they're doing, and they've been nothing but honest guys with us. So a company like Mountain Ops is, you know, destined for great things just based off how we see their building their customer base and you know, marketing their brand. So that's another company that, you know, we think very highly of here at the Natural Born Hunter. And
you know,
Casey and Jordan, hopefully they can get it done with an elk. They're out there in Wyoming or in Utah chasing elk too. So good luck to those guys. But NBH20, in case you need some Mountain Ops products. But Will,
right,
you got anything else for Gary? I'm starting to get strapped on time myself. But I definitely want to catch up with you again. I've got a tournament that I have not released the details yet that I'm going to be hosting next year at our new location. That's going to be pretty unique to archery as far as the bow hunter. It's going to be mainly a bow hunter competition, but I would love to be able to put that event together with a hunting film tour stop.
Cool.
And create a fun, just another one of those events where you can come hang out with your buddies, maybe, you know, measure yourself a little bit, but if nothing else, have a great time and then, you know, maybe catch the film tour in the evening.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. No, we'd love to work with you guys on hosting an event. We can get it up there for the Natural Born Hunter. That'd be pretty cool.
Yes, sir.
Heck yeah. And Gary, again, if you buy protein or you want a snazzy flat brim hat like the one I'm wearing or the one I have Phil himself wearing earlier, Just go ahead and enter that promo code NBH20, and you will get 20% off your entire purchase.
Whoa. So Gary, how are you supposed to wear a hat? Do you wear it flat, or do you bend the brim?
I kind of right in the middle. I'm too old to be straight flat, you know? That's just not cool on an old guy. And I'm not into the, like, Bubba Trucker style where it's wrapped around a coffee cup.
Yeah, well... I would put myself in between, but don't get me wrong.
No, wait, Gary. What is it called when you wrap it around a cup and or can?
I don't know. I just made that up. I don't know.
No, repeat that.
You know what I'm talking about.
One more time. Was it? Did you call people who
can't
wear
offend
hats?
Anybody? So I'm not repeating it. But you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Bubba trucker hat.
Hey, man. when I was playing ball in college for a few years, that I was able to play ball in college. That was the way you wore your hat. You bent that sucker until you can barely see your eyes. It was coming around almost to the corner of your eyes.
Phil,
that's how you wore a hat.
That was the 90s, Phil.
That was the 90s, and
time
I was
changed,
very
dude.
Happy to be. I was very happy to be in that time frame. But now, understanding the whole, you know, the current style, I'm not a flat brim guy myself. I don't bend my hats back like I used to, but I do flex the brim a little bit.
Vintage is in now. You should get that style rocking again. You should just bring it back.
Hey, you know, I might. Don't get me wrong. You know, we have a huge following here at the Natural Born Hunter that really is starting to dig some of the fashion.
It's becoming almost a internet war. You've got the flat brim guys on one side, the Bubba Trucker Coke can hats on the other, you know.
I'll represent you, Bubba. I'll represent you. I'm bringing it back.
So Gary, what you're saying is all the young guns, the good-looking guys, the tastemakers.
Whoa. What are you saying, Will?
I'm saying if you're uglier, you bend your hat a lot to cover your face.
Okay. Let's not start bashing the older guy thing because you young guys will. I mean, I'm here to represent the mature audience of the Natural Born Hunter.
Do we have anybody who listens to us?
I don't know. But, hey, once again, we appreciate your time tonight. Look forward to seeing what you guys have to come and working with you guys down the line on being, you know, hopefully, like I said, hosting a stop for the film tour. And just supporting you guys in your movement and your vision and your message. So anytime you feel you want to use our platform to spread any kind of information, man, we'd love to have you back on.
Awesome. Thanks for the invite, guys. It's been a lot of fun, actually. And, yeah, we'll definitely hook up again in the future here.
Yeah. Or
have
if
another
you
chat
have,
as things progress.
Or if you have a great film, some guys doing some great films, you know, you think we'd be interested in talking to, send them our way.
Yep, we'll definitely do that. There's some really great filmmakers that would probably be a lot of fun to talk with.
Well, we're looking forward to that. And, Will, hey, man, appreciate it. As always, had a good time. And you want to check us out?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you know what that means. It's time for Phil to go to bed. So everybody remember, wake up, chase your dreams, repeat.
Good advice. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks for coming on.
You bet. Have a great night. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night.
Later.
Bye-bye.